Welcome everyone to the Connective Health Podcast. My name is Ryan Hess. I am the CEO of Connective Health and will be your host for today. This is our fourth podcast in a series around how healthcare is evolving. We've assembled an amazing set of innovators for the podcast today, spanning leading technologists to those managing risk across an entire healthcare system to those implementing it in the day-to-day patient interactions. So, with no further ado, I will kick it off and have folks introduce themselves. Emily Walker from Syntax will be our first introduction. Emily, welcome.
All right, thank you. I'm excited to be here. I'm Emily Walker, the Chief Analytics Officer at Syntax Health. My background and history is as an actuary, a health actuary, mostly at health plans. I've been working in the value-based care space for the last 10 years, and I'm really excited that our Syntax Health team has assembled and have ultimately been focused on building out a SaaS-based enterprise solution for actuarial contract modeling, intended to improve transparency and the ability for providers and payers to negotiate together in value-based care arrangements.
I'm Sean Garcia, and I'm the Chief Quality Officer for Brevard Health Alliance, and I'm responsible for the value-based care strategy across our payers. And I'd say for the last 6 years, I've been focused on data analytics and informatics. Let me hand this over to Dr. Riley.
My name is Dr. Rob Riley. I'm an internist by training. Started my career as a hospitalist and in academic medicine. Transitioned to Central Florida in 2013 to be a part of a healthcare organization known as the Villages Health, which is where I currently practice and serve in the role as medical director for risk-based care. We serve a retirement community of over 100,000 and growing residents. We are fully at risk for our Medicare Advantage patients, of which we have close to 30,000. With that, I'd like to hand it back off to Sean for a little perspective on value-based care.
There are four principles that apply to value-based care. And from the top down is, first one is population health management tied directly to data. The third is clinical operations that support the first two. And the foundational step is really finance. And those are investments in the right areas so that you can get those returns on that VBC side. So I said that because it's really up to us. It's up to us to be able to go out there and convince sometimes leadership to take this step. And I think it's well worth it for us. I feel strongly about the double bottom line business, where improved outcomes of patients also boost our bottom line. So what a great place to be. Rob, do you have more to share?
Value-based care means a lot of things to a lot of folks, right? I'm a practicing physician first and foremost. So I always think about the patient and how outcomes could be so much better. And I think that's just because the design has always been inverted and the patient really at the bottom of the pyramid instead of at the top. We have a system that we're putting together, you know, as a value-based care model, where we take on full risk for our patients. And what that basically means is our patients are at risk for their healthcare outcomes financially, quality measure wise, in every way, shape, and form. And what I think that does is it really drives alignment. You've got physicians that really want to do a good job and take good care of patients. But when the payment model incentivizes more touch, more care, more visits, higher intensity of care rather than driving towards the outcome of the patient, how the patient ultimately does determines how the physician performs. And I think that really helps to align the physician's, their approach to their practice in a much different way. Obviously, it comes at a cost, whereas you move from volume to value, it means that you have to really design your system in such a way to provide more support. You need more information and more data. And in order to take better care of the patients in a value-based system, it really does come down, as Sean said, data drives everything. Understanding your patient's risk and then managing to that risk.
This is the time for, in my opinion, in my view, clinical personnel to take a systems approach to healthcare delivery. So no longer, and this can be a little concerning to some, perhaps pure finance folks, but it's just not a widget production system anymore. You have to understand how all these components weave together to produce a financial outcome to really get that ROI. And that's what's new to a lot of folks. And I found in my view that those who are systems thinkers really excel well in this space.
And it's one of the things that I think, you know, both of you kind of spoke to this, that appreciation for really wanting to see value-based care succeed. In my experience, and I've worked in value-based, you know, on the analytics side of the house for 15 plus years now. What I always found fascinating is that more often than not, whether I was at an integrated delivery system on the health plan side, if I was at the system side, or even at a national payer, so many of the pain points from a data and an analysis and a modeling capabilities, they persisted, right? Like it didn't matter what size the organization was. And a lot of that comes down to we have an infrastructure that is that's claims-based, that's fee-for-service, that's, you know, widget-based. And I think the transformation of that is particularly challenging. It's one of the things that when we think about solutions and how to solve for, you know, challenges and barriers in value-based care, I really lean into a concept of building more transparency, more visibility in order to improve the trust that we have between the different parties that are working on each of these arrangements. So physicians historically have always been really well trusted by their patients. Insurers, not so much, right? Not as high up on the net promoter scores and things like that. And one of the things that I think continues to sort of need to be in place is a reckoning, basically, to really build back that transparency, build back that understanding and that trust between parties that what we're doing is, in fact, you know, a fair distribution of risk. It's the math is flowing. And I'm a big proponent of show your work. I think it's that fifth grade math teacher that just really instilled it in me that this is what you show your work, you get partial credit, you prove that you know how to do it. And you can repeat it every time. And so, you know, one of the things that as we've developed Syntax, it's been really we've leaned into show your work, be auditable, be open and ready for a peer review, whether that's from another insurer, that's from the provider, that's from a fellow actuary, that's from whoever, right? Like if you don't have a track record to show that it's not clear, then you're opening yourself up to challenge and you're opening up the door to distrust in the model. So we really leaned into that. I will tell a little bit of a story on the VBC side of the house, things that I've observed. I'm a big proponent of VBC. I have been for many, many years. And what I realized is that there are some really good like reasons for why providers and payers often will struggle in this space. And there's not quite as much energy or enthusiasm about shifting the infrastructure and the payment method. And the example I'll give is one where, and this did not happen just once, but this was an experience that really stuck with me. I was in the process of reconciling a full risk arrangement. It was a deal with a commercial provider for a commercial population. And from our math, it looked like this provider was going to earn $8 million. And that's based on the contract, what was agreed to. We said, wow, $8 million, that's the biggest check we've ever written, right? In this contract, like these arrangements, we should let the plan president know. Maybe they want to have a LinkedIn press release moment. Let's give them the space to do that. And we went and met with the plan president and their CFO. And the reaction was not a positive one. In fact, it was, what? Are you sure? I was just in a P&L review and I'm behind. How can this be? Am I accrued for this? How did we know about this? What's going on? How can that possibly be? And that continued for a little while. And it was that moment, among a couple of others happening, where I was like, I think what we're incentivizing might not be clear to everybody. We may not have fully documented or fully made transparent exactly what these levers are that are going to make it a different story to tell, so that if you're looking at your P&L strictly from a fee-for-service basis, how does that need to be translated in order to come back and make sense to our providers, to our payer organizations, that actually is savings, and it's savings on a certain term. And I think that translation can be a challenge. I don't know, Ryan, if that's something we want to dig into further.
we've been talking about there needs to be transparency. The model needs to change. Payers are interested in sharing more and more information. That is what we're trying to do, is say, hey, you were struggling before. These are good faith efforts, but obviously they are not, you know, they, like Emily was saying, this is not being interpreted in the right way by everybody. How can we get them to the point where, yes, this is a better situation. This is a better spot for the provider to be practicing on a daily basis. Primary care providers are happy about what they do again. So I thought that's our perspective. And then Dr. Ryle, I think this would actually be a great place to turn it back to you as a person who is practicing day in, day out, trying to treat patients from a primary care perspective.
You know, it's funny when we are recruiting and hiring new physicians and nurse practitioners and PAs, and I participate a lot in that process. And, you know, when I try to explain our system and our model, one of the things I try to make very clear is the work is not easy work. It's better work. So now we're facing a couple of challenges, right? We got a new patient there. First visit, they may have waited a while to get in. They're excited. They got a lot they want to bring to the table. You've got quality gaps that you got to close. You've got meds you got to reconcile and refill. You've got referrals that they're going to need because they're brand new. Oh, and then by the way, there's this 95-page medical record that has dumped itself into the inbox that you're supposed to sift through, make, digest it properly, make good conclusions, make good care decisions, all within, you know, that 30 to 60 minute window. And so that 60 minutes gets eaten up really, really fast. You know, when we look at our data, our MLR on our first year patients is 35-40% more than it is by year three. So by the time we get from year one to year three, our benefit cost ratio is down in the 50-60%. We're hitting in the 80s to 90s in year one. And why is that? Because we're managing their costs immediately. We're taking care of their medical expenses day one, and we don't know very much about the patients, and we're trying to piece things together. We don't have their risk adjusted codes ironed out because we don't know the patients. And so that's the brilliance in my mind of Connective Health, and, you know, sharing with the audience that we're in this new partnership with Connective Health, really excited about it. Partly why I came on today was just because I think this is a great partnership, and I'm just very jazzed that we're moving in this direction. But, you know, aside from the ability to digest all that information and provide a succinct capture of this patient's very complicated, potentially medical history in a 3-5 page PDF document that I can work through with my team in advance of the visit. Our coders can do their part with what they need with it, put it all together and tee it up for me. I come out looking like a hero. I walk in the room, the patient thinks I've known them for 5 years already. It's great. I'm capturing their codes visit one instead of visit three or four, which could quite frankly spill into the next calendar year. And then we've lost a whole year of risk-based payment. And not only that, now I know what my risk is on this patient. I know what programs they're going to need straight away as far as cost mitigation risk, whether we're going to need the paramedics going out and checking on them weekly, whether we're going to need them, care management services right away, whatever it might be. It's just, I think it's the right way to do it. It is a lot of data. Data is great, but data can be overwhelming. There could be so much white noise in there. And how do you tease out what's legit? So from my perspective, this is going to enhance the care. It's going to get you're going to get more focused and better at what you do before that first visit with the patient, and subsequently in future visits, because we know people leak out of the system too. And the fact that we've got your team, you know, making sure that there, if there are things happening, that we're made aware of them in a fashion that's very digestible and very user-friendly, I think it's a great thing. So that's my kind of take on it, but love to hear what Sean might think too.
Yeah, Rob, I think you're spot on with how Connective Health helps improve your pre-visit planning and preparation for the patients. It's something that we also do on our end at Brevard Health Alliance. And I'll just share just briefly about when you talk about data at the organizational level. And Ryan and Emily, you talked about this, and I'll just mention a story that I've experienced myself. And so health plans are very willing to provide organizations with Excel sheets of data for their patients, multiple different formats. And as helpful as that might be in their eyes to the network, that is not digestible for the network itself. And frankly, can cause frustration I've had health plans mail me hundreds of folders with information that they expect our clinicians to act on. I take them and I walk them from the mailbox into the shred bin. No one's going to distribute these hundreds of patients to across our system in the county. No one's going to do that. So that's helpful. It's helpful to know it's available, but to the point, how do we get this digestible where we can act on it together as true business partners? How do we do that? And Emily, maybe you can share some insight in that.
Yeah, I like to refer to that as my special filing cabinet when it's, you know, the bolus of information that, you know, is way too much. You're not going to be able to absorb that. I can honestly say there's at least a locker size space of shredded material that I've generated in my analytic career. So we're detail folks, right? Like we really like to see the details and walk it through. And I think one of the things that, you know, especially with being able to have the right actionable information at hand, it's critical, I think, to have that transparency and to know, you know, what do these models mean? What are they going to do? It's also recognizing that there is difference, right? There are different audience needs. And so for a provider who's actually treating patients and caring for a patient, I want them to understand the financial model very much. But should that financial model directly influence how they're going to treat, you know, Grandma Jean? No. Right. No, that shouldn't change how Graham gets her care and what, you know, what decisions are made by her physician. And so I think it's really important that, you know, some of the differences that exist between Syntax and Connective Health are there on purpose. You know, the Syntax Health team, we're focused on the financial modeling, on the actuarial modeling of the financial contracts. There's an overarching kind of macroeconomic type of view that's there. Yes, it does, you know, come down to an individual and a microeconomic influence, but the decision that's being made by a physician, the actual workflow that's happening in the office still has to be driven by that clinician. That's what they're trained in. I am not a clinician. I'm an actuary, entirely different field of study. And I think it's really important that those two arenas kind of still maintain compartmentalized functions, but are able to speak one another's language more often. And that's one of the things we loved about the Connective Health team and in our product, just kind of recognizing these are our lanes, our zones of genius. And here's where we want to be able to function and operate. Here's how they can be married together to really start to see, you know, both arenas addressed, but done in a way that makes sense to that user so that you're synthesizing data to the right audience, to the right people, but also recognizing that there's a right and what must be a continued sort of differentiation or distinction between the two functions. And I think that's something that, you know, our Syntax and Connective teams recognize and we're pretty excited about.
I would like to add, if I can, to both what Syntax and Connective do is, for someone like myself who is consistently speaking to health plans, is it allows us to continue to build trust with the health plans. And it also allows them to see what we're dealing with. And I found that to be extremely helpful in the discussions around, because let's say at the national level, health plans understand value-based care, right? Every leader at health plans know VBC, but it's done locally, right? So the local leaders in the health plans, they may not know what VBC is, even though they might've had multiple seminars, multiple meetings, et cetera. They still think it's managed care. And in their mind, it's managed care, decreased costs at all costs. And for us to be able to translate that, what we're doing in real time, and Rob did a great job explaining of all the things clinicians do and health systems do to be able to deliver that care up front, sharing that with the health plan and then saying, okay, this is what we're doing every single day to be able to achieve these metrics. Now let's talk about how we work together on this. And this is value-based care versus the other managed care side, which just doesn't work well.
It really is, at the end of the day, that's really what it all comes down to. We've got all these levers to pull and all these metrics that we're being measured on, and data is great. There's more of it now than ever. But I think at the end of the day, you know, no one goes home and high fives about their RAF score or their admissions per 1,000 number. I mean, they go home and high five when they feel like they took great care of Grandma Josephine, you know, that she didn't go to the hospital and she gets an extra month to go see her granddaughter graduate high school. I mean, that's really what it is. And that's what gets me out of bed every day is just the ability to know that I can have that outcome, but I can't work in a vacuum. And I would consider myself a good internist, but I'm only as good as my team. And I'm only as good as the information I have at the bedside when I'm there. So, you know, and how to process all that information, because it can be a bit of an overload when you've got so much coming at you at once. And in the meantime, by the way, you're also supposed to make sure that patient walks out feeling like they had the best visit that they've had all year. And you get measured on that too, by the way, with a net promoter score. But we do a good job of that. And you know, we don't apologize for it. I think there's a lot that goes into it, but how great to have even more information, but really not just more information, the right information. And I think that's what I see Connective Health providing us. When we piloted it on a few patients of mine that were new to the practice, it was it really changed the entire flow of the visit. It made it such a more efficient visit. I walked out feeling like, okay, I know what we're doing today, tomorrow, and in 3 months from now, and so much better prepared for what I was heading into and walking out for that care plan, just knowing that we did it structured based on the patient's risk, and so much of that informed by the information I had from Connective. So, you know, I think as our providers get their hands on this, they're going to love it. We've kind of opened the lid slowly on it. We didn't want to let too much out of the box right away, because I think folks are going to want to use it right away, and we're not quite for prime time yet. But once we get there with this partnership, I really think it's going to be a game changer. So I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, ultimately it's going to just make the patient, you know, help us get better outcomes for our patients earlier in their care than it otherwise would have.
This has been a great conversation. Let me first thank all of our participants. You know, we heard a lot of talk around making sure that there is transparency and a real mutual understanding of what folks are trying to achieve with the new value-based care models. And then I think you also heard there needs to be a lot of translation. So great that there's transparency, but we cannot add a deluge of data on top of the data that providers are already drowning day to day. And the outcome of all of this needs to be providers who walk in every day into their jobs and feel great about it. And then that leads to great patient outcomes. And that's really what we're all aspiring to achieve in our roles. So thank you again to the folks listening in. And then thank you again to our great participants on the podcast today. Have a great rest of your day.